Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, May 8th, 2023. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support the effort to save them. You can also support us by purchasing the books, Government by Consent and Court Access in the Common Law, also found on the right-hand side of our website. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Everyone should get involved in our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. Click on the link on our front page or, again, on the right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off. We're going to pick up on our scripture reading where we left off last week. We're in the first epistle of John. We're in chapter 2, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 2. My little children, these things write I unto you, that ye sin not. And if any man sin, we have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ the righteous, and he is the propitiation for our sins, and not for ours only, but also for the sins of the whole world. And hereby we do know that we know him, if we keep his commandments. He that saith, I know him, and keepeth not his commandments, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. But whoso keepeth his word, in him verily is the love of God perfected. Hereby know we that we are in him. He that saith, he abideth in him, ought himself also so to walk even as he walked. Brethren, I write no new commandment unto you, but an old commandment which ye had from the beginning. The old commandment is the word which ye have heard from the beginning. Again, a new commandment I write unto you, which thing is true in him and in you, because the darkness is past, and the true light now shineth. He that saith he is in the light, and hateth his brother, is in darkness even until now. He that loveth his brother abideth in the light, and there is none occasion of stumbling in him. But he that hateth his brother is in darkness, and walketh in darkness, and knoweth not whither he goeth, because that darkness hath blinded his eyes. I write unto you, little children, because your sins are forgiven you for his name's sake. I write unto you, fathers, because ye have known him that is from the beginning. I write unto you, young men, because ye have overcome the wicked one. I write unto you, little children, because ye have known the Father. I have written unto you, fathers, because ye have known him that is from the beginning. I have written unto you, young men, because ye are strong, and the word of God abideth in you, and ye have overcome the wicked one. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passeth away, and the lust thereof. But he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. Little children, it is the last time. And as ye have heard that an antichrist shall come, even now are there many antichrists, whereby we know that it is the last time. They went out from us, but they were not of us. For if they had been of us, they would no doubt have continued with us. But they went out, that they might be made manifest that they were not all of us. But ye have an unction from the Holy One, and ye know all things. I have not written unto you because ye know not the truth, but because ye know it, and that no lie is of the truth. Who is a liar but he that denieth that Jesus is the Christ? He is an antichrist that denieth the Father and the Son. Whosoever denieth the Son, the same hath not the Father. But he that acknowledgeth the Son hath the Father also. Let that therefore abide in you, which ye have heard from the beginning. If that which ye have heard from the beginning shall remain in you, ye also shall continue in the Son and in the Father. And this is the promise that he hath promised us, even eternal life. These things have I written unto you concerning them that seduce you. But the anointing which ye have received of him abideth in you, and ye need not that any man teach you. But as the same anointing teacheth you of all things, and is truth, and is no lie, and even as it hath taught you, ye shall abide in him. And now, little children, abide in him, that when he shall appear, we may have confidence, and not be ashamed before him at his coming. If ye know that he is righteous, ye know that every one that doeth righteousness is born of him.
Okay, Jan, do we have any questions or announcements?
Yes, we have quite a few questions for tonight. First one, is an individual able to subpoena another individual for a copy of their birth certificate or subpoena a hospital for a birth certificate of someone? If so, what is the process?
Well, I know that in a during a court process, there's provisions for that. I'm not sure about outside of a court case, though. I don't know what reason, you know, you'd have to come up with a good reason, but I don't know what you would do outside of a court case. Obviously, during, discovery, you can ask for documents and different things in order to make your case and prove your points. But as far as being outside of a court case, I'm not sure how that would work.
Okay. A few days ago, I watched an interview of a man named Payman Madaheda, who claims he has not paid federal income taxes for 30 years and got away with it. Has John or Gerard heard of this man? If so, what's the scoop? He has a website called freedomlawschool.org.
I'm not aware of the person. I did see that, and I did take a quick look at the website. Anybody teaching that has to be real careful. I have tried over time not to get too involved in that. We will be covering some of that information concerning the IRS in our course. But to build a website around that is quite dangerous. And to tell people to do that without really having an extensive knowledge of how things work and how the court system works and how the IRS is really put together and what the law says and how USC 26 reasonable about a knowledge of some main points in USC 26. Without all that information, you can run into trouble. I know when I first stopped paying taxes was when I went to business for myself. So trying to break yourself away from the system, if you're employed by someone, that's a problem. And because you get flagged and you'll get in conflict with your employer and all this other stuff. But I wouldn't worry too much about that right now because, the other side of devolution, the IRS won't be there anymore. The bank, obviously, the Federal Reserve will be gone, and things will be quite different. So, but I really suggest that people be very careful with that if you're going to, get involved with something like that right now. Okay, next question.
I am in the common law class, and I've heard from this gal two times now, and I've taken all the other courses offered, and I know that there is much to be done to save this great nation. I have been hesitant to reach out previously because I'm not sure that I can offer as much time as you may need from your volunteers, as I am generally working double shifts week after week. Ultimately, I would love to work full-time defending our freedoms, but since the mortgage still needs to be paid, I have to continue what I'm doing now. I am a former school administrator and would love to still be working with our nation's youth, but the woke agenda became too great and I walked away after 25 years. I do believe that education is going to be the key to our restoration of this nation, and I would be willing to help with materials and programs you may have in mind. I would also be interested in filling a role as a district coordinator, but worry that my lack of schedule flexibility might prohibit that at this time. I also know someone who is a top-notch researcher, and she'd love to volunteer as well. Feel free to reach out and let me know. This is signed Tammy, and we have her in our list of volunteers. So,
okay. We can use her expertise. Even if she can't get too much time to us, maybe we can have some meetings when we have some questions concerning how things work. I mean, being a school administrator, I have a lot more knowledge of how things work than I would. So that would be really good for us. And, of course, anybody that's a researcher has some experience in researching. We can definitely use their experience, too. Jen, maybe you can make contact, make sure we have their information, and possibly at least with the one person that wrote that, not having much time, but at least can give us advice, and over time I'll see how things go. Also, get on the list of being a district coordinator at some point in time, hopefully sooner than later, of course, but we don't know how long. At some point in time, we will go professional, and when that happens, those positions would be paid, and if there's a vacancy at that point and that person's on the list, we can then fill that position if they're interested in a job that way. But anybody interested in that needs to start preparing. We'll be having some meetings coming up. It's taking a little time because we really have a lot of organizing to do structurally, with NLA, kind of restructuring. But we do want to start getting some meetings. I was hoping to have some meetings this week. I don't think that's going to happen yet. It'll probably be the week after. But we might have some meetings with a few people. You know, we'll probably meet with the different groups of people with different things that they'd like to work with on us. You know, work with us on. You know, independently. So we'll pull all the district coordinators together. I'm working on some information that'll be advantageous for them on what their job requirement would be and all the information they're going to have to feed down to the individuals that are down on the grassroots level to assist them in the building of the committees of safety. But again, we're still working through some restructuring right now. And as soon as we get all that cleared up and written up, then hopefully we'll get that done this week. We'll see how it goes. And then we'll start meeting with other groups. But I might be able to meet with some of these individuals this week. I don't know. But we will call them, you know, by certain groups. Okay, next.
Okay, it appears that my faith may have truly moved mountains because I got my public defender to file a motion to dismiss my criminal self-defense gun charges of 1, concealed carry, a Class B felony in Hawaii, and 2, ammunition in the gun, a misdemeanor. Would you please read it over and let me know if you believe it is solid in its case law references? And this went to mail, I think it was. I don't know if you got a chance to look at it or not.
Yeah, I did see that, and I did read through it, and I was impressed. I can't believe a lawyer wrote that. So he did a pretty good job. So, I think it's a good paper. I think it's powerful. I think it should mean something if the court seeks justice, but they're not going to want to let go because they have agendas. Nevertheless, the paper is really good, and I would suggest that if they do not respond to that properly and dismiss the case, then you need to move it to federal court for cause. You have a much better chance there, at least with the last ruling concerning guns that was made last summer, on the Second Amendment, which was pretty powerful. So kind of hope that, the federal courts will honor what the United States Supreme Court had said. Since you're not going up against the status quo, so to speak, and you'd be going there for, you know, for them to champion the Constitution, that being the Second Amendment, I think you have a good chance there in the federal courts. But who knows? We'll see what happens in the state court there and if you get a good decision. I don't know how the judge can, summary judgment on behalf of the defendant is clear. I mean, it should take place. But anyway, I thought it was a good paper. All right, next question.
Okay, this is kind of an add-on to that. It says, can I ask him to amend it after it's already been filed? Motion on hearing is June 22nd, 23.
Well, this is a criminal case. I'm not too sure on the criminal case, but I think it would be the same thing. In any case, when you file a paper, let's say as a pleadings, but this is not a pleadings, you're a defendant. But from the perspective of being the plaintiff and you file your pleadings, your first paper, and if nobody answers, if they didn't answer yet, let's put it that way, then you can repair without going for asking the court for permission, you know, to repair the paper, to add something or whatever. In criminal court, I'm not sure. You'd have to probably get permission from the court, maybe. I don't know why the lawyer wouldn't know the answer to that one. But I don't know the answer in the criminal courts. And I would imagine you can. I'd imagine you can. Right.
This is the short question. How to go after a public official in their private capacity if they are enabled by the system to break their own statutes?
Well, again, if they're acting within their jurisdiction and within their authorities, then, of course, you can't sue them directly. I mean, you could try, but it won't win because they are protected by the state. Once they step outside of their jurisdiction, step outside of their authority, or actually commit a crime, then they no longer have the protection of the state, and then they stand on their own. Although often, of course, the government will supply a lawyer. I know I would challenge that. I know when U.S. attorneys in the federal courts, U.S. attorneys will come in and represent the individuals even though they stepped outside of their authority. But anyway, you know, well, I guess I don't have much more to say than that on that.
Okay, this is a little more specific then. I wonder how to formulate a case against our state election official who has broken the laws and statutes. I am unsure of how to proceed because I understand to not go after the state official in his official capacity. Our state election law states that they can have an electronic voting / mail-in voting if they do a number of things, including an audit of 10% of the precincts. I am a direct witness that they did not do 10%, but rather 0.03%. I am just wondering if you have any sights to how I should proceed or if you think the case exists. The Republican Party filed a lawsuit, but it was dismissed. Do you think this is a good case to file as a court of record? The official was able to get away with breaking the law because the judge ruled that although the official did not follow the current election law requirements for auditing the election, the judge argues that nobody was harmed by his breaking of the law. The voters were harmed. I was harmed by this because I am one of we the people having to live in this state of tyranny.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to get anywhere with that, of course. You should be able to, but not in today's environment at this moment. Again, if they broke the law, you know, stepping outside of their authority. Let's look at it from another perspective. I'll just talk a little bit about an IRS situation. And when they come out and they seize money from you without a warrant, I mean, that's a crime right there, and it's they can't do it. And, you know, the thing is you can go up the line to the people responsible for them, and if that's the common thing that they do, the IRS, we know that that's common for them to do that. So you can go right up to the commissioner, the head of the IRS. Now, again, in other situations, I don't know the details specifically, but maybe you could do something. But I know with the voting, there's so much corruption going on. It's difficult to deal with that kind of a case in today's environment. So, and again, I don't know much more about the details on that. So,
okay. Having watched interviews with Kash Patel and hearing his comment on the subject of the FBI, he states that it should not be disbanded but reformed. I do not agree with that. Along with most others, having witnessed their conduct and criminal behavior, especially recently. What is NLA's thoughts regarding this subject?
Well, again, I'm not too sure exactly what you mean when you say reformed. If you're saying, well, okay, you know, again, there's got to be some detail on what that means. But look, at the FBI, I think, it's not necessarily a constitutional agency. I don't think it is anyway. But I do think it is a valuable agency. I think it is an agency that's needed. And the problem is they went rogue. I remember when there was a big battle going on and with a lot of the people, you know, federal agents that worked for the FBI. And there was a takeover going on over what was that, and that's what was happening. And I think that was in the early 2000s. If I remember, there was a big thing in the news at the time, and they were almost like a demonstration outside the FBI building. And that's when the takeover took over. A lot of problems since then, and the whole thing is corrupt. But I think, and Trump mentions about cleaning house when he comes back in again. So, and I believe he mentioned the FBI on that too. Now, I think a restructuring is probably what's going to happen. I don't think you can get rid of the FBI. I think it is an important agency. Again, I don't know of any authority for that agency, but that's something that people have to think about and figure out. So I guess there's, you know, it's controversial.
Okay, there were a couple other paragraphs, but they didn't have any questions attached. They were just statements. I think in terms of announcements, I don't know. I assume you all know by now that Loy Brunson's case was refiled and has been accepted by the Supreme Court. I think it will be heard on the 24th of April, if I remember right. So I'll just toss it out.
And, you know, I started working on the case that we have concerning sort of an indictment on the federal level as far as the federal courts are concerned, the federal judiciary. And the whole purpose is really to bring us back to courts of record, courts of justice again. And started working on some papers today on that, and I'm hoping to get some papers filed, so the timing might be just about right, too, since the Brunson case is starting to move.
And that's all the questions, John.
Okay. All right. I guess we'll go to anybody who has any questions, get into the queue. We'll go to the queue in a minute or two. You know, I just want to make this announcement concerning Help Wanted. We did start off talking a little bit about that. Anybody that wants to volunteer some time to assist us, we need lots of people, as many as possible, on the national level here. You know, at some point in time, a lot of these positions will be paid positions because we do have to go professional. You know, we can't really perform the necessary work that we now are going to have to perform as a volunteers. We need people full-time and focused and either educated or being educated. So anybody who would like to put some time in with us to help us. The other thing, and more important than that, is really people stepping up and starting committees of safety on the grassroots level. So if you haven't started one or you haven't joined one and you'd like to join one in your county and there's not one there, maybe you can initiate the beginning of trying to get one started. You know, initiating that beginning and to get things going in your county doesn't necessarily mean you have to lead it if you don't want to. You know, one person has to start it and you meet together with a second person eventually and a third and a fourth and so on. And when you get a half a dozen to a dozen people together, then you have your first real presentation on what it is you're doing. You introduce it to the people in the county, you invite as many people as possible, get some assistance from the district coordinators who will help you with a list of people in your state to get your the names, counties, and phone numbers of people in your state. And it's always a good idea to invite people, even in other counties, to your county because that can spring up a committee of safety in a county next door to you or across the state. And that's going to be a necessity, you know, working together with other counties on various other various things that affect more than your only county. So, and I guess that's about all I have. Again, you know, we always tell people on the grassroots level, you know, when you start the meetings, you get together, you get 20 people together, maybe after your first introduction and you start to have your meetings. 20 people can grow to 40 people quite quickly if everybody brings a guest. And some people will bring more than one guest possibly. And some people may not be able to bring anybody from time to time, but people should always look to try to bring a guest to every monthly meeting. Same thing here at National Liberty Alliance. People should consider bringing guests to our Monday night program. Bring them out to the website, have them take a look at our front page, and the key understanding of what we're doing is found on our front page. Anybody who really wants to get a really decent picture of exactly what we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance, you'll find it on our front page. Between the written word on the front page and watching the videos on the front page, we did record a seminar, I think it was 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, a seminar we had recorded, and it's up on the website. And that gives a real good picture and touches pretty much all the things we're trying to do by creating committees of safety and dealing with the court system, so the judicial process and the political process in order to have government by consent. So again, please think about bringing people and getting people more involved. We're hoping to get critical mass. We've got a decent amount of members at this point in time. Not that everybody is active, but nevertheless, you know, there's always this percentage of a small percentage of the people that really get active. And if anybody, you know, one of the things I want to try to pull together is some people who might be able to help us on dealing with the social media and trying to get interviews for us. And that'll probably be one of the first meetings that I'm going to try to get together. Maybe we can pull those people together this week and talk with them and get some, you know, some ideas and get something going there. So anybody that thinks they can help us with getting interviews, you know, just get a hold of Jan, let Jan know, jan@nationallibertyalliance.org, or send it to mail@nationallibertyalliance.org. Give your name and make sure you got your phone number in there, and we'll contact you and put you on a list. And when we do have a meeting, we'll pull you together on that. But if anybody just has, you know, access to, you know, to some group that they can connect us with, even without getting too involved with us, but just making that connection with Jan, and then he'll negotiate a time or a schedule with those individuals and a meeting, a pre-meeting usually, with the person who's going to do the interview, and get some interviews going, because that's really where we're going to get the critical mass from, is going out and giving interviews to various different blogs and, well, I guess they don't call them blogs, but well, radio programs, and also different, I guess interviews through, you know, Rumble or YouTube or wherever they have some kind of a presence. All right, I guess we'll go take our questions. We only got a couple of people in the queue, so if anybody wants to get into the queue, now's the time to do it. We'll take our first person. Okay, Hawaii. Aloha.
Aloha. This is Xander. I sent in that motion, I think, which has stunned everybody so far, because I am in Hawaii, and Hawaii is one of the 7 May issue states, which basically means they, you can say, like, I've had threats, you know, to my life. I live in a neighborhood where there's tons of crime. I'm disabled. And you can submit, like, a request for a permit, and they don't even have to give you an explanation. They can just say, nope, which they do. Anyway, so I was in a situation where the Second Amendment saved my life. And as a result, it was exactly what they call it, the great equalizer. It thwarted the robbery, and it stopped all the violence. And they don't like that because, you know, it shows the Second Amendment in a positive light. And in a tyrannical state, that's not what they want. They want control and power and all that stuff. So my question is, I think you addressed it a little bit. When I went and read the motion, a couple things stuck out to me. I'm not really used to reading motions with, like, case stuff. And some of it read really easy, you know, like the Bruin stuff. I could follow that very easily. But there's times where he keeps saying, dismiss count 1 and 2. And count
and
one.
I saw 4 counts in there, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. And so count 1 is the concealed carry, which in Hawaii, that's a Class B felony offense, which carries with it a 10-year prison sentence. You know, whereas in half the states in the country, they just have constitutional carry. You don't need a permit. You would be judged on how you used a weapon of any kind. So, you know, it's definitely a Supreme Court issue that could be heard. And so all that to say, after the Bruin case, what he was arguing in that motion was that count 1 simply cannot hold any weight because of the Bruin case saying it's simply my right to conceal carry in public for self-defense. And count 4, actually, you'd be proud of me. He was going to write it without count 4. And I said, excuse me, why aren't you including the ammunition? If I have the right to conceal carry in public for self-defense, then it would make sense that I have the right to have the ammunition in the gun. And he's like, let me think about it. I need to talk to some people. And so he got back to me and he added it. So that's great because, again, it's not my right to carry a metal object. It's my right to carry arms. And so he was a little confused and wasn't sure if arms ammunition was covered. And so I talked to some people, and they said even that arms ammunition is covered under arms in cases in the Heller case in 2008 and I think the McDonald case in 2010. Anyway, all that to say, to me, this is so important. This motion.
Well, one of the things he didn't include was the latest decision by the Supreme Court just this past summer, and I don't know the name of that case, but you should research that out and get that in because they made it absolutely crystal clear. And that's why if they reject this motion to dismiss, because he made a pretty good case on this. If he can add that, he should. He definitely could move the case to federal court for cause because they're denying your right of your Second Amendment right.
Well, he did mention Bruin. That is the case that was heard last year. Justin Clarence Thomas was the one that penned the opinion on that. And what's ironic is that hearing on motion is this June 22nd, 2023. That is the one-year anniversary of the decision coming down, the New York Pistol and Rifle Association versus Bruin that gave us all these, concealed carry and self-defense. What I was concerned about is he did include the ammunition, but he didn't mention, I don't think he mentioned Heller or McDonald. But
yeah, your mic, are you moving your mic around or something? Because we keep getting this noise, this squishy noise.
I'm in Hawaii, and it's always freezing. Yeah, I'm sitting outside. I'll go inside. Okay. So, anyway, like I said, I just want this to be really pristine. I want this motion, to be as legitimate as possible, just even for future people trying to reference it. And so I had asked him, go ahead and show it to me before you file it. He goes, I won't do that. I said, excuse me? And he goes, that's not the way it works. I go, I don't want to, unless I feel like it represents, what I feel is right about my case, I feel like I have the right to have a say about it. And he goes, no, you don't. So I'm just letting you know, this is I don't know if this is a straight up tyranny in Hawaii, but, my understanding is that I have a right to fair trial, a speedy fair trial where I have the right to face my accusers. And if someone's going to file a motion and it doesn't, in my eyes, give me the true opportunity to prove my innocence, I might say, no, I don't want that motion filed. Like, for example, before he did this, they wanted to file a motion to suppress the gun as evidence because they said they didn't read me my Miranda rights properly. But that's not what this case was about for me. The case is about a Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms for self-defense, which is exactly what I did. So I'm okay with him filing it.
But remember, even if they throw the case out on another issue, that you should accept that and be happy with it, But go ahead, continue.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, I'm just kind of letting you know little shenanigans that have been going on because it's just a little bit strange to me. I'm learning a lot as I'm going through the process in regards to just how they, my friend says, they're basically creating a claim instead of investigating one. It's like they're designing exactly what they want. And like I said, he really went out on a limb, so I believe he's a good guy. And that goes back to what I was saying about faith moving mountains, because I literally had, my back was up against the wall. It's been over 2.5 years, 5 court-appointed attorneys, and I had the judge, the prosecutor, and my own attorneys prosecuting me. Nobody would listen to me. And they ended up throwing me in jail. I was in jail for a couple weeks because they put a faulty bench warrant out against me, and I kept writing over and over saying, quash it. This was fraud. The prosecutor claimed that I had a bail amount of $25,000. I never had a bail amount that amount. So all that to say, they could have done anything they wanted with me. I was locked up in a jail cell for 2 weeks. And I just prayed to the Lord. I said, Lord, you can do anything. And I'm throwing up a Hail Mary right now. And I refuse to back down. These rights come from you. I'm not waiting for anybody. If I get martyred because of this, I will get martyred. But I will stand before you, and I will stand tall, and I will stand proud. And all of a sudden, I get this public defender who's like, I'm going to write this motion for you. And I had asked every single attorney before that to even discuss Bruin with me. And every person goes, oh, I haven't had a chance to look at it yet. This is over 2 years. Well, a year since it's been out. And so I'm just saying it was really weird because he brought it up. And I was like, wait, what did you just say? And so he did it.
This is another court appointed attorney?
It was kind of weird what they ended up doing.
But the person who, the lawyer you have that wrote that paper, he's court appointed?
Well, he's public defender. So yes.
Okay.
You'd say both. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah. So anyway, going back to, I kind of like my question about, so there's parts in it where he says, I guess this is a typo, but like I want it fixed. He says, my client, you know, defendant has the right to self-defense so that she can protect him. And he was referencing my landlord who had been, who was an active shooter, and I caught on video shooting into my lawn furniture. So I had called the police. They did nothing about it. So, you know, I was basically saying I had the right, since I called the police, to report an actual crime, gun violence, and they didn't care. They said it was a civil matter, which, of course, was nonsense. And so they were coming after me for exercising constitutional right and hurting nobody, no injured party whatsoever. And so he was trying to say her landlord is much bigger than her, and she had been trying to get help because he'd been shooting at her and had been threatening her over many, many months. And so she had the right to self-defense that way, so that she could protect him. And I was like, oh, God, that was, you know, it was so perfect the way he said it. And then he goes, to protect him. I was like, no, I wasn't trying to protect him. I was trying to protect me. So it's just things like that. I was curious if, like, you know, I could just fix some of those things and then send it back to him. Can he file it again with amended, you know, whatever is on there that, you know, we want to fix?
But you did tell him of the errors on it, and what did he say?
Well, not yet, because he had just filed it on Friday, and I was trying to have a few people look at it, because I can come up with the typos. You know, that stuff's easy. I'm like, I have a master's education. But what I wanted is for a few people to look at it that actually have some expertise in case law and see if these references, like I'm about to call a lawyer with the USCCA, because I'm a member of that gun organization, and I want to see if he referenced these cases properly. So I just didn't know if you had experience with that, just because you know a lot about the militia and all that. So I'm just running it by a few different people.
All right. Well, you know, I'm sure it is the case that the lawyers are taught this thing. You don't share this with the client, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I don't know. You know, and he may have been warned also, because, you know, he's working in the court system, and to them, you've been problematic to them. But it's pretty sad that in a situation like this, that they don't share, they refuse to share the papers with you before they file them, so you can give some commentary on it, and at least talk about it. Because, and again, you know, you do have some errors there. And they should be addressed, and he should realize and accept that. But what you should do is make the notes of the problems that you saw in that paper and have them corrected.
Okay.
So
yeah,
that's
what I thought I would do is, like I said,
I wouldn't make too big a thing about the case as far as, you know, wanting to know what he's filing if he's not going to share it with you, because right now I don't think you have much of a choice. But again, the results of this motion is key, because the results immediately, if you don't, this motion doesn't get approved, then you immediately need to move this into federal court, because that's where you'll win it. And he should see that and understand that. But on the other side of the coin, a lot of lawyers are not comfortable going into federal courts. I've seen that before. And not a lot of it, but I've seen it before. And they're just not comfortable there, and it's a different world for them. So, you know, I don't know. I know lawyers have moved cases or opened cases in federal court when they don't have the jurisdiction, and I often scratch my head not understanding how come they don't know that they don't have jurisdiction to hear these cases. I guess they got a lot of blank spots when it comes to moving into the federal court if they're just used to working, you know, out of state courts.
Is there anything I could do to, like, I guess, like, if it doesn't work, say, fire him, go pro se, and then...
No, just tell him. Just tell them that, you know, you tell them that you talk to someone else, too, if you want. I mean, or just, you know, tell them that, look, you know, they're not granting this motion. They are violating my rights, and that's a cause. You can go into federal court for cause, and a cause is a violation of an unalienable right, a constitutional violation. that is a cause of action in a federal court. And when you move it into federal court, the wherefore clause wants to really ultimately command the lower court to cease and desist. I mean, ultimately, that's what you're looking for.
Okay.
And it should be cut and dry and pretty simple. And even if you had to do it yourself, you could probably do it yourself. You have time, because they just filed the paper. They just filed the papers, right?
Yeah, he just filed it on Friday, and then I guess it's called a hearing on motion. I don't really get it. I thought if you filed a motion, the judge would just answer it maybe within like 10 days. But apparently,
well, a hearing on a motion doesn't necessarily mean that you have to go into the court to be heard. I mean, maybe it does. I mean, they may call for that. It is a criminal case, so that might be the case, but I'm not too sure. But a hearing on a motion ultimately is a deadline for all the papers to be in, because now the other side, the prosecutor, has to respond to why that case shouldn't be shut down, or respond with withdrawing the case. One of two things. But in any event, that other side has to be heard. And then, of course, the judge would make a decision on that motion when looking at both sides. And that this is a major problem for us at this point, because these judges, they're just so corrupt, and they're not really just, and they don't rule in common law, you know, common sense often. And they'll put crazy statutes above common law, common sense, and that's a problem. I mean, again, hopefully on the other side of things, it'll be different. And it's got to be different. We got to make it different. And the only way we're going to make it different by taking control of the courts, which is what needs to be done, and which is what's right to be done, because that's the way it was. The people control the courts of law. So. Anyway, I think you got a good paper, and you probably did he say a date on when they're going to hear it?
Yeah, it says right on the paper, the motion 6/22/23. So
okay,
that's
over a month from now, so that's really good.
Wait, that's good?
Oh yeah, because it gives you plenty of time.
To
okay.
Do what?
You're in the course, because you're continuing in the course. You're going to get far more advanced in the course. You're going to learn a little bit more. We'll be talking a little bit about moving cases into federal courts. And if there is a problem with your lawyer and he doesn't want to do it, by all means, you should do it yourself. Then you got to do it, because that's the only way you're going to win. If this judge says no and doesn't accept that motion, for a summary judgment on your behalf, as behalf of the defendant, because it's the right thing to do and it's the law. I mean, it's clear as anything I've seen. I mean, it's just crystal clear. And if they don't see it as crystal clear, you don't want to be in that court. Even though it will be a jury court, but remember, they stack the juries. I mean, that's another problem, which we'll be talking about stacked juries also in our course. And we're going to cover some things. It'll be uphill battles, but we're going to talk about some things that need to be done in order to prevent the jury from being stacked. And if the jury is stacked, on how you can kind of, if you want to call it, unstack it or unpollute them or something of that nature. And again, you only have to win the mind of one person at the jury. That's all you got to win, because they have to have the unanimous opinion in order to convict. And if you can just touch the mind of one person, just one, to see the light and say, wow, you know, hey, I see this and I understand this now, they're not going to budge then. And the other problem, though, is then they'll say it's a locked jury. They have another word for it also, but in any event, a locked jury that can't go anywhere. And then the judge tries to call a mistrial. Well, no, you don't call a mistrial. If the jury can't come to a decision, they keep going back until they can. The only other option is to just admit, we're just going to have to all agree to let this person go and come back with the final conclusion. But to have to go through another jury with another going through another course of the case again, that's double jeopardy, clearly. But I've seen and heard of things where even the judges overturn the jury's decision. I mean, it's just unbelievable the things that they do. I mean, it's just so out of out of any kind of sense of justice. It's just horrible.
Yeah, and I did ask one of my attorneys, because I asked for a trial by jury, and the judge says, you're going to have a jury trial. I said, I want a trial by jury. Because same thing, jury trial, you're getting a jury trial. Well, I asked my attorney at the time, I said, is it true that in a jury trial, the judge can change the facts of the case? He goes, yep. I mean, I don't know if that's just in Hawaii, but that in a trial by jury, they can't.
Well, and they say what they're taught, and that's what they're taught. They've totally destroyed our court system. Totally, totally, 100% destroyed. I mean, again, from time to time, you can get things through because the procedure and the process is there, but just how they look at things is totally corrupt, and that's the problem. So, again, a lot of these judges got to leave, of course, and the bar has to go, and because the bar is what created the problem, and that was the purpose of the bar. And the bar teaches subversion, ultimately, because they teach all this stuff, and they got all this stuff through. You know, the Rules Enabling Act, it's a bar-pushed item. And even writing the rules, you know, it's a group of bar attorneys that put that together, or bar judges. Either way, it doesn't matter. It's still the same thing. It's the mindset of the bar. And, I mean, how can they possibly even, and they believe, and they go forward with this idea that they can abrogate the common law. I mean, that's total insanity. I mean, even legislators can't even abrogate the common law. And I'll go as far as saying the people can't even abrogate the common law. Once been put in effect on the Declaration of Independence, you have to get 100% agreement of all people, and including your posterity, right down the line. Of course, that's an impossibility. You can't do it. It's already been set in motion. And the Declaration of Independence ultimately is a covenant with God to live under His laws, and the benefits of that is God's blessings of our liberties. I mean, that's what the Declaration of Independence ultimately concluded, and that's the foundation of our law. So.
Okay, so I just want to make sure I'm understanding what you're saying correctly. So if we get to the 22nd, like I said, which is the anniversary, 1-year anniversary of the Bruin case in the Supreme Court, for, you know, to make concealed carry in public for self-defense, you know, just to codify it as a right. If the judge denies that motion, then without even firing my attorney, with the information and knowledge that I learned from your course, I can then file a federal case against them.
No, you're not filing a federal case against them. You're moving it to federal court for cause. The case is being moved to federal court for cause. And the interesting thing about this case is the entire case can be heard if necessary, and there wouldn't be no hearing on it, really, because it would be a decision, and I think it would be a quick decision as long as the federal court follows, what the United States Supreme Court has recently ruled just that last summer. And so you're moving it to federal court for cause, okay, and they have to decide the constitutional issue, you know, and your position ultimately is that they are violating your right of second amendment right, and I see it as a slam dunk, and the paper you have is a nice paper already done to be brought right into the federal court. Again, you don't have much to write, maybe 2 pages, just to introduce the case and the purpose and the final wherefore clause on what you expect in the federal court to do. And attached is the paper, whatever paper you need to take into that court, which is your paper. And that's it. But remember, on the 22nd, I think it was the 22nd, you said, on the 22nd is when he's going to hear it. It's not when they're going to make the decision. So you have more than a month. You got like 5 weeks, 6 weeks before you get to the point where they hear the case, hear all the different sides. And then after that, they like to take their time, a couple of weeks, maybe 2, 3, 4 weeks more. So you look in 6, 8, 10 weeks before you're going to get a final decision on that particular motion, so it sounds. That being the case, gives you another 6 weeks of learning and preparing for this.
And how long were you saying you feel like the judge would take to rule on it after it's heard?
Well, it'll be heard on the 22nd, as it says. It's just a day that they get all the papers worked together, and that's it. Whether they have an actual hearing on it to discuss it back and forth, that's a possibility. And being a criminal case, they're more apt to do that in a criminal case than they would on a civil case. But that's not necessarily so either. The general rule is that the hearing is going to be, in other words, that's the date everything needs to be before the judge. He may not even look at it that day anyway, but everything is there. It's on his desk. Maybe he can get to it that day. Maybe he'll get to it the following week, but he'll get to it and go through the paperwork. Remember, he's got a workload like everyone else does. So he'll go through all of that, or he'll have a hearing, and then all that information will, again, be sitting on his desk, and again, he'll eventually get to it and make some decisions. So all that takes time. So, yeah, there's quite a bit of time. I mean, clearly you have at least 5 or 6 weeks just off the bat, even if they were to make the decision the day of the hearing. But that's not going to happen. It just doesn't work that way. It's going to take a couple of weeks, maybe more, before the judge probably comes back with a decision. But I don't see why. I mean, what is your... one of the things next time you see a lawyer is ask them, well, they reject or refuse this. What's the next thing we can do? See if he, don't tell him about going to federal court. See what he says. Because if he doesn't say that, he's brain dead. But I wouldn't get rid of him or anything. I wouldn't, because he did do a good paper. And let him go in there and represent you. You know, that makes little things work better in the courts because they want lawyers in there. They don't want people in there. So... But, that's what I think you might want to do.
Okay. So it sounds like what you're saying is he would have to move it to federal court for cost.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Now, I'm just going to warn you.
Because you could rest assured if that judge does not allow that, doesn't throw this case out with that paper. If he does not do that, rest assured, probably 80% chance you're going to lose this case. Because, again, remember, I did a paper on this. I did a paper on this, yeah, concerning stacked juries, okay? They have questionnaires. You know, you should ask your lawyer if he can get a copy of for you the questionnaires that they ask for the jury in that court. And I'd be interested in seeing that. I've got the federal questionnaires, and it's unbelievable the questions that they ask these people. This is like a psychological review of the people's minds. I mean, to make a decision who they're going to put on the case and who not. So it's that starts off behind the scenes, so to speak. You know, they know what's going on with inside the people's minds. They can get the liberals this against the case here, or vice versa, or whatever. Again, juries are stacked. So I'd be very concerning on that.
Okay. I will definitely ask him that. The other question that I'm going to ask him is the indictment that I was supposed to get back in September, they refused, even though there's a statute that literally says I have the right to get the transcript from the indictment, because I guess that before a grand jury, defense doesn't even get to go, which I find really strange all around, but whatever, that it is what it is. But they wouldn't give it to me, which, just is a big red flag right there.
They wouldn't give you what now?
They wouldn't give me the transcript for the indictment. Because to me, that would tell you a lot.
I don't know that you can get that. You see, the problem is, here's the problem, and it's an automatic realization of the problem. You got a prosecutor going in to bring a case before... a grand jury. They're already biased, and they're going to do everything they can, and they're going to hold back information. If they have information that renders you innocent, they should just not even take it to the jury. Okay, forget about revealing it to the jury. They just shouldn't take it. because they know it's wrong, because they're going after the wrong person, or they don't have the evidence needed. And that's why it's so important that we bring our courts back under the auspices, the grand jury under the auspices of the sheriff himself inside that courtroom, inside that courthouse, because the sheriff is totally neutral to this whole thing. He's not looking for convictions. He's not looking to get people off of convictions. He's just looking for pure justice. That's it. So he gets the information from the attorney. He's not going to be biased about it, and he's going to look at it and realize that, hey, there really is no case here. Or maybe to say they don't have enough evidence to do this, but there does seem to be a case here. Let me do a little investigation. Let me see what I can find. And he may find more evidence to be able to bring it in before feeling comfortable to bring it in before the grand jury, or he may get more information and realize, well, hey, this case just won't work because first of all, this person doesn't look like that's the person that's guilty, or they just can't get the evidence. Whatever it is, the thing is the sheriff or the coroner is the ones that should be talking to a grand jury. No lawyer should be in there talking to a grand jury. That's a major problem, and that's why if this judge goes the wrong way, you want to get out of there. And the only way you can do that is in the federal court.
Okay.
And I do know you don't have sheriffs out there in Hawaii, so, but that has to be fixed at some point. And we do want to do something about that. We need some researching going on and some time to put paperwork together. But eventually, at some point, we've got to get our sheriffs back to places where we don't have them anymore. But go ahead. And by the way, we certainly have a couple of people in the queue, so if anybody wants to get into the queue. And Gerard, maybe after I finish... you might want to take the board here, but go ahead, finish off. You were saying.
Oh, I just want to say. So the last thing I'm curious about is if my public defender, who wrote the good paper, but let's say we see that it's skewed and they're just going to do whatever they can to make sure that I don't catch up. I did some research. 85% of Ninth Circuit. Court cases get overturned in the Supreme Court. So it's not a good ratio even in the federal court. I'm just saying. It's pretty bad. We're like Hawaii, California, Washington, Oregon. It's awful. There's some other ones in there, but the worst. All that to say, I think with what I'm curious about in regards to what I'm learning is...
Yeah, but you're saying that 85%, I think you said... of the cases in the Ninth Circuit, I think you said. Is that what you said?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what you're in, get overturned?
Yeah, so 85%.
But bear in mind, that is not a jury trial, though. The jury trials cannot be overturned. Okay, but once a jury makes a decision, it's final. Now, if there's a violation of a right of somebody in there, even the defendant, then the Supreme Court can look into it. But without that kind of a violation, that's why in reality and in fact, cases to appeal a jury trial cases where there's no cause, in other words, a constitutional issue with a violation. Without that, there is no taking it for an appeal. And you can appeal it up the line within the state. It just shouldn't be overturned unless there's some kind of an error somewhere that's obvious.
Well, sorry. The thing is that this is a, it's a Fifth Amendment case, too, in the sense that the girl who they're saying is their complaining witness, who I pointed the gun at because she robbed me of my phone and I couldn't call for help, she was caught on the 911 call saying she wanted to kill me. So, you know what I mean? It wasn't just that I felt like I, needed to defend my life. Like, she admitted she wanted to take it,
Right.
So there's a lot.
Well, again, look at you got a good case written up there. I'm very surprised, and see where it goes.
Okay.
And even if he still refuses you to see the final paper, well, the paper's already put in, right?
Yes, it's filed in docket.
Okay, so what paper do you want to see that You mentioned you wanted to see another paper before he files it. What paper might that be? The next paper, if any?
No. I had asked him before he filed it to send me a draft because I wanted to be able to send it to someone.
Oh,
okay. Right?
And he didn't. You know, he didn't want
and
to.
And he just said, no, I'm not going to do that. And he just filed it. Now, I agree with you. I thought he did a pretty good job. My concern is that there's parts.
Right. Yeah. Because he's going with that. He's treating you like an invalid, like a child or something, and ultimately that's how it really is. The courts look at it anyway. That you're a moron. You can't do nothing. You can't figure nothing. You need a lawyer to do this. I mean, that's how they view it. That's why they don't want you there, because you upset the whole thing. You know, lawyers are not going to upset the cart here, because if they do, they could lose their license. So.
Right.
All right, we're going to move to the next person. Appreciate it. I mean, okay. There is nobody. Oh. You go ahead. There's only a couple people in the queue if anybody wants to get in.
If I could just ask you one question. Can I ask you one quick question?
Here, go ahead, real quick.
Okay, sorry. This is just significant because I've never been in this situation before. So I noticed that in the docket, right after he filed the motion to dismiss, you know, the concealed carry and the ammunition charge, the state filed a motion for disclosure. And I asked him to send it to me, and it basically says, like, I need to provide for them as soon as possible all my witnesses, addresses, and, you know, just all this stuff I need to provide to them. And it kind of struck me because I'm like, I asked my attorney, I'm like, do you even have their evidence yet? He goes, no. I go, did you ask for it? He goes, yeah, I filed it. I go, why isn't it in the docket? And he goes, I didn't put it in the docket. I go, then okay, then please provide me with a timestamped, you know, receipt of what you gave them and when. And he goes,
well, you can go up and look on the docket yourself. You know, you can open up an account to get in there and look at things. And
well, no, I'm not worried about that. What I'm worried about is that, again, some, like shenanigans, I'm supposed to not have to prove anything.
That's right.
To have to prove myself.
Right. And so what you're saying is that there's nothing there yet for you to even respond to. I mean, you can't give a list of anything to you. You've gone through all this discovery. I mean, it sounds like they're pushing forward for a trial. The question is, and it sounds like discovery has not really taken place yet, which gives the opportunity for you to ask the questions of the people on the other side. Well, actually, your lawyer should be doing this, but again, you know, really you should be doing this if you run your own case. But meanwhile, you got a lawyer, so they got to do this. And it really would piss me off if I had a lawyer telling me that I'm not going to participate with this. I mean, I just wouldn't. I wouldn't have that. Period. End of subject. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't, because again, you know, experience is the key here. Not that I have that much either, but nevertheless, you know, you don't have much of a choice. And he did write a good paper. Your next step anyway is going to be, if you don't win this paper, your next step has got to be moved to federal court, period. Nothing else to talk about.
Well, I guess in between there, what I'm trying to figure out is they filed in the docket, the state, basically saying, we request for disclosure. So they're like wanting all this like information from me or from us. And I'm like, wait. You haven't even provided to the
court. Well, again, you got to look into what they mean by disclosure. I mean, you know, and again, this is all part of discovery, and the other side needs to be giving you the information before you have to give them any information. What do you know?
Right.
You don't even know what you have to defend against. Yeah, you have charges, but you don't know the details of what the other side has claimed that you have to defend against. So what are the details here?
Yeah.
You know, and it sounds like the only thing that they got is the codes. That seems to be the only thing they have is the codes. The fact that the witnesses that they have, it sounds like, well, okay, yeah, the situation happened, and yes, you had a gun, and they witnessed that gun, and that's it. Now the next step is, well, okay, code violation, pop, and the code requires X amount of years in jail or whatever the case may be, you know, blah 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 blah. So if that's their full case, you know, case is already done and over almost. Even though you're going to have a jury, it'll probably be all done in one day easily. And again, I'd be very concerned, because they're going to stack that jury. And the judge is going to tell the jury, I can already read it here to see it, the judge is going to tell the jury, hey, you guys get to decide the facts, but I decide the law. So if you find that this code was violated by that person, you have to find them guilty. And so, you know, it's just everything's set against you. I guess we lost our caller. Okay, we're going to go to Larry. Hey, Gerard, you there? Do you want to take the mic and controls here? Let me, meanwhile, unmute my Larry, it looks like, I think, is next. Yep, Larry from Arizona. You got the mic.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Good.
I just got a couple of comments on things that are going on in current events. But I will say something about that Freedom Law School. I had some dealings with them a few years ago. One thing that, and I used to do taxes professionally for 30 years, and I bowed out after I found out how fraudulent it was. But the Freedom Law School, they charge their clients like $4,000 a year to get representation from them, and which is way overboard. That's just my opinion on that. But
so they're lawyers. They're taking on a case as well as what are they doing?
Allegedly, but I didn't think it was worth
one of
the
things. One of the bad things is people giving advice. And to people, and it may be good advice and things that they've done, but if they don't know how due process works, what are they going to do with that? And people exactly. think that they can take this information and go into court and deal with the court, but they don't know how due process works. I mean, that's what we're teaching people here right now is how due process works.
Right.
Many times I've given advice or thoughts, ideas, but I always tell the people, you know, if you don't have the experience and you don't know how the court system works, you got a problem. You got to learn how it goes because you're not going to be able to go in there. And you know, it is pretty simple, you know, how the process works, and it's logical.
Well, okay.
And that's what makes, you know, that the fact that it's logical is really, it makes it easy because it's just logical. So once you see the procedure, you know, just say it makes sense and you know it. It's not a big deal. But it's the writing of the papers, of course, that and puzzling through and dealing with every issue that's brought up, every word spoken or written, every phrase, every paragraph, every sentence, everything. You have to have a strategy for everything that they have pulled together on every piece of evidence, and you have to really fortify your positions, and you got to puzzle things together, and that's where the work is at. It's not so much in the process of how things work, because that's simple once you learn that. It's just you know, the puzzling is the hard part, and then writing it, and the best way to really learn that is just by reading cases and reading papers. That's the best way to learn. And one of the problems, though, is reading the court cases that lawyers write. That's problematic because that's a whole different story, and you'll pick up a lot of bad habits. And you might think, well, okay, I got to bring up court cases to support my case. No, you don't have to bring up any court cases to support your case. Anytime I bring a court case up, it's only to bring forward the law. That's all. Nothing more. Just the law. Because, you know, a case may be similar to mine, and that's what they'll do is they'll take a case similar and they'll say, well, you see, this is what happened there. It's very similar to this case, and they ruled this way. Therefore, this case should be ruled the same way. I mean, that's how they fight court cases. It's ridiculous. They call that common law. But, you know, in common law, there is a maxim that says a thing similar is not necessarily the same thing. So it doesn't matter. Yep. You could be 99% identical to my case. That 1% changes the whole thing. That case has nothing to do with my case. You see, and you got to understand that. That's an important thing to understand. But we have a lot of papers that we've written, and, you know, founding documents, of course, is great to really analyze. Of course, the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and the Constitution itself. A lot of stuff in the Constitution, you know, it's really directions and information for you know, for instance, Article 1, certain details and how they break up and when they meet and so on and so forth. And then they make their rules, you know, legislators make their rules and so on. But the key thing, there are key points, of course, that are important, you know, like the powers and the authorities in Article 1, the powers and the authorities in Article 2 and Article 3. That's where we want to focus in on. But we've got a lot of cases up there. We've got lots of memorandums up there. They're all common law focused. And by reading through those things is an education. Reading through a good, strong case, Marbury versus Madison, unbelievable, okay? There's numerous cases that we have, maybe about four or five cases that we have listed that people should really read through because they're extremely powerful and empowering because of the decisions, especially on these earlier cases.
I'll just say one court case that I like a lot is Hale versus Hinkle.
Yep.
I don't know if you've read that one.
Very familiar. I use it all the time.
That's a good one. But anyway, I wanted to just say one other thing, and this is just food for thought for either people in Colorado or California. Both of those states are talking about doing laws for reparations. But in my research, and I just wanted to bounce it off you, John, I think it's an ex post facto law, which is illegal.
Absolutely. It's moronic. It's stupid. All it does is keep the whole problem alive. That's all it does, because people see themselves as victims, and as long as you can keep people seeing themselves as victims, you got something that you can use as far as as leverage and to keep the argument going, right against the left, the black against the white, so on and so forth. So, yeah, it's ridiculous. That being the case, then I think, we should all sue women. All us men should get together and sue women because of what took place in the Garden of Eden. So, that's how ridiculous it is, But anyway. Yeah, no, that's a very good point that you brought up.
The one thing I was trying to do is, and I don't know if anybody's taken your course or anybody from that's from those two states, but somebody should take the bull by the horns. I don't have the standing to bring a case, but if they pass these laws, someone take the bull by the horns and get it knocked to the curb, because it doesn't belong.
Well, it's a big problem on many, many levels. Let's just say that was to go through. Well, okay, who are you going to identify as this problem? I'm second generation. My father was born here in the United States, but he was born not long after his father came to this country. I have nothing to do with that. Same thing with my mother. My mother was born in the United States, but her parents was born in Germany. I had nothing to do with the slavery business. How are they going to single us out and not damage us? It's just creating havoc and just wrecking our nation and our law even more, creating more division, maintaining the people, maintaining victimhood, okay, making people be victims, and you got to keep that going because you got to keep them on the plantation. That is the whole point. This has been going on from the very beginning. As soon as a lot of people don't know that the Republican Party was birthed in order to get rid of slavery. 1 year before Lincoln became president is when the Republican Party came into being, 1 or 2 years prior to that. And the purpose of the Republican Party came up in order to go against the Democrat Party, which was getting most of their support from the South, which was trying to maintain the slavery. And of course, the war came about for that. And then after they saw the war was lost, the Democratic Party moved in with the Jim Crow laws. It was the Democrats that did that and made that separation down south. It's always been the Democrat that's maintained these people as victims, trying to keep them secondhand citizens and keeping them as victims and making that separation. And they worked for a long time to keep people in slavery. It was the Federalists, people who called themselves Federalists. There was a division in the Federalist movement, where we had the Federalists, of course, as the debate for bringing the Constitution together. But it was the Federalists that really was holding close to this idea of keep maintaining slavery in the South, and eventually, of course, they compromised down to making them 3/5 of a person, and that's written into our Constitution, and the Federalist became the Democratic Party in, I think it was 1801 or 1803, so not long after our Constitution came into play.
One other thing I was just going to tell you, it's too early to tell you the decision, but I just submitted a 21-page paper to my local county tax assessor because I found out that my personal property, my home, is not taxable by law. But they ignore that and they whatnot. So I filed a paper against them saying, hey, if you don't quit taxing me, there's going to be trouble.
Well, what is there something specifically written other than the fact that you can't tax person's property anyway? I mean,
there's like a ton of case law. There's this land researcher that I know of, and I've met him personally. His name is Ron Gibson. He's wrote a couple of books about this stuff, and I was just using his material because he travels all over the country giving seminars about it.
Mm-hmm. And he does a land patent thing.
Yeah, he does the land patent thing, and his land patents are very, very good, too.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a book on land patents. And
yeah, I don't know that it's really necessary to go through all those changes, but maybe it is, and I'm ignorant to that part of things. What exactly do they do in order? Do they have to resurvey the land or something? I mean, what are they doing in order to do this land?
What you do is, like, on a land patent, you claim back to the original land patent. The last time the land patent was claimed on my property was almost 100 years ago. So the assessors just relied on the fact that people are ignorant, and they because of that. You know, what
well,
they're doing.
Here's my opinion. They just decided one day that the land needs to be taxed, and then they did it. And then they created all this language and stuff, you know, here's residents.
Right.
Commercial properties and so on and so forth, and from my opinion, you know, law, even though it's constructive, it's also simplicity and logical. And the bottom line, if they logically just decided one day that land should be taxed, people owe. Well, why don't we just decide one day that that's unlawful and our property is private and leave me alone? I don't care about being called residential or anything else. And that's your battle, in my opinion. I think that's the only battle that needs to be won on this side of devolution. On the other side of devolution, we won't even have to make a battle.
Right, exactly. Well, the research I've done on the property tax, the only thing that the state really has a right to tax is a commercial building, you know. But your own private residence, they don't.
Mm-hmm. Gerard, are you unmuted?
They try to lump the two in the same category, but that's it. That's wrong.
Say that last thing again. The only thing that what?
Okay, they try to make your personal abode try to treat it like commercial property, which they have a right to tax.
Well, I don't know that they have a right to tax commercial property. I think they have a right to tax commercial activity, but if you own something that is commercial, I don't see how that has anything to do as far as property tax is concerned. Again, it's just property owned by an individual or by a corporation. You pay the tax when you make the purchase. What are you going to keep paying taxes forever, and what's the purpose of that, and where's the money going? So I don't even think that should be taxed.
From the research I've done, they've got so much money in slush funds. The last time we should have paid property taxes back before we were around, John, in the 1940s.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
And clearly, if you have to pay tax every year and you don't pay it and they take it away from you, clearly you don't own your property. You don't
exactly.
Even you're renting it from them ultimately. So
that's the bottom line right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's all I really have for now, but I'll keep you apprised of how that goes. I know they're going to not like it, but I don't care.
Yeah. You know? All right.
Anyway.
Okay. Can you hear me? Yeah, go ahead. You want to take the controls here?
Yeah, I could.
Anybody else wants to get into the queue? We only got one person in the queue. Oh, two people in the queue right now. No, actually one. Larry's finished. So, anybody want to get into the queue? Star. Well, if you're on a phone, star 601. But any other place, an app should be a button. Is that how it is? Is just a button to get into the queue when we open the queue? Is that how that works?
I think you gotta hit star 6 to get in, don't you?
Well, that's if they're on phones. So.
Oh.
But anyway, the people know how to get in. But good, you got the controls. I'll back off. Just hit next question, and next person's from Arizona. Also, it looks like.
Hello.
Hi. Hello.
Hey, how you doing? What's your first name and your state?
Erica, Arizona.
Okay, welcome. What's your question for tonight?
Okay, so I have been going through court stuff for a year. It's felony charges in the Superior Court. It all stemmed from not having a license plate on my car. I'd been driving without one for a year. Cop pulled me over, boxed in my car. I ended up giving him my name and birthday. He ran it, didn't find anything, then wanted my VIN number, which I had in the front covered up, and he said, open the car door so we can get the VIN. Well, I felt very threatened at that point, and I'm like, no. And I asked them, was this car reported stolen? Because they said, you're impeding our investigation, which what investigation? I had not committed a crime. And so then they brought out two more officers, so there were four, and the sergeant, they devised a plan because that was in their statement, and that's what they said on the stand too, to pull me out of the car. So three officers, you know, ended up grabbing me to pull me out of the car window to get me out of the car, and one of them, his hand, my mouth was open because I was like, oh my gosh, and his hand went in my face. They had my arms. I couldn't push his hand out of like my mouth, and so I did bite his finger. Like, get your hand out of my face. So they said that was assault. They reached in, unlocked my car door, dragged me out, cuffed me, took me away. And they said it was two counts of assault and one count of resisting arrest. So I've had two, like, arrest warrants because I missed court dates. They forced a public defender who, after I wrote a letter rogatory, he was like, no, I can't represent you in the private. And he would not step down. He said, the court hired me. And then it was a hung jury. He said it's a stacked jury. Well, somehow seven members out of the eight of the jury decided that I had AIDS and that I was purposely, intentionally giving the officer AIDS. I was like, what? I've never had a disease in my life. But the cop on the stand said he was terrified for 6 months if he'd have AIDS.
Did you say there was eight jurists?
There were eight, yes. There were 10, and then they took two out as...
Well, this must be a town court or a city court or a village court or some kind of court like that, no?
Superior Court.
I don't understand that. Superior Court is a state court, correct?
Yes, it's Maricopa County Superior Court.
I can't believe that. Eight people on that's unlawful. A jury must be 12.
Well, even with the grand jury indictment, they had 10.
Well, they can whittle down to a certain number, and I think the minimum number is 12 on a grand jury. You know, they can, you know, you start off with 25, but if everybody doesn't show up on certain days or whatever, they can make decisions as long as they have 12 people there. And that's common law. I learned that from Brent. But eight people... That's not a lawful court. You know, that might be a loan, something you could bring into federal court for cause. I'd have to think about how to do something like that, or as far as how to couch it. You have to puzzle out the words for that one. But that's interesting. But go ahead.
They've ignored everything I've said. So I have filed, and you can tell me if this was useless or not, but I filed a bond on the case in the public and the private. I had given the judge, it's been to 5 or 6 different commissioners and judges. It just keeps going to one after the other. I never claimed to be the defendant. The first commissioner claimed I was, and then I also never contested any of the facts. And I told him, I said, I accept for value and return for value, you know, all charging instruments, and use my exemption as principal. And so...
Well, you do realize you made a lot of mistakes in this case, right?
It seems so.
Yeah, lots of them. You know, your first mistake is to fight with the cops. They have no clue. They have a job, and what they're doing is wrong. There's no doubt about it, but they don't know that. And by resisting them only creates more problems. I mean, this could have been really probably a simple case, and, you know, the worst case could have happened is you got a fine because you were driving without a plate or whatever, you know, whatever they say to that. And... So you kind of escalated it. I would never. I am very respectful to the cops. I don't debate or argue anything to them at all. And more often than not, you know, we get stopped by a cop. They just let me go. I mean, I have gotten tickets. I haven't had one in a while, but I've got tickets. But a lot of times, just being nice back to them and so on and so forth. So that those are problems. The other thing is you know. You sound like you're using some of the things that a lot of people on the internet are teaching, you know, the man on the land stuff, you know. You'd mentioned a few things, keywords that you had mentioned that make me realize that. And again, you know, these people shouldn't be teaching these things on the internet. I know what they're doing. I know what they're saying. But they're only getting people in trouble because it doesn't work to begin with. Your best bet is to deal with the problem straight on and call it for what it is. It's fraud, depending on the case and what you're arguing. You know what I mean? But you kind of put yourself in a bad situation here, and it didn't have to be this bad. You know, I have a friend who, you know, the same kind of a situation happened to him not too long, a couple of years ago this was. And they arrested him, and they beat him up pretty bad, and black eye and other bruises and stuff. But the bottom line was, you know, they didn't have a charge to arrest him. Okay, so what were they arresting him for? They arrested him. They said for resisting arrest. Well, okay, fine, resisted arrest. What were you arresting him for that he resisted? They didn't have an answer. Okay, and 9 times out of 10 that happens. But the thing is he, I got all beat up and everything, and he didn't have to do that. Because he did the same you thing you did. He refused to get out of the car, and the cop cars came, and, you know, it just went on. And that's a dangerous situation also because, you know, they have these, they call us sovereign citizens. You know, I am a citizen, and I am sovereign, and we all are. Sovereign citizen, depending on how you define the words, could be problematic, of course. You know, I understand that. But anyway, you know, as far as the cops know, they're taught in the police magazines. It was put out by, what's the name of that group, Gerard, that lawyer group?
Southern Poverty Law.
Southern Poverty Law, right. They pushed real heavy. Matter of fact, we got to get back to that lawsuit on them. But they pushed very heavy information, and they got it into the police magazines talking about us, you know, anybody who believes that they're free and independent and that they're sovereign, that they're a danger to society. Quite often they overreact. They even sometimes come out with the SWAT. And you can get hurt in this situation. So you should be careful. It's not worth, you know, I fight with the judge. That's where I fight. And my fight is very, very simple now. You know, it took me a long time to realize how simple it really could be. I was my own worst enemy to some degree in some of these cases. But you know, I was going through the School of Hard Knocks, just like you are. And but the bottom line was, I don't fight the cop. If I do go to court, if I decide to go to court, then I'll go in there and I'll fight the judge. I only go once now. That's what I put in my brain. I'm only going to this court once, and I'm giving them the opportunity to just throw this case out because they don't have personam jurisdiction over me. And if they don't do it, then I serve them with a paper and move it to federal court. Now, I haven't had to do that yet. Last time I threatened the judge with that, they gave them original papers. They just threw the case out at that point. They tried to keep making a deal with me, you know, and it kept getting lower and lower, you know, so I knew I was winning in their minds anyway. And eventually they just said, that was my last ticket. But up till that point, you know, we went through all kinds of stuff trying to figure out how to deal with these people. But it is pretty simple, really. Don't fight with the cop, fight with the judge. And you don't even fight with the judge, you know. You just tell them what you're going to do, period.
Why did they? What was their probable cause for pulling you over? Because you
no
had plate.
No, he didn't have a plate.
I had no plate
at all, right? Back or forefront?
Yeah, in Arizona, you normally need it on the back, and there was no plate on the back. I had been driving that way for a year.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
you
my car was not registered. Huh?
Do you live in a desolate area, or are you...
No. I live in Phoenix. I live...
Well, that's surprising. You lay with that long. you are insured.
Yeah.
You had insurance on it?
I do have insurance, but my car is not registered, and I gave up the driver's license.
Well, you see, that's another thing that's problematic. And again, you know, I would never tell people to do that because you're just getting into more trouble, more hassles. And I agree, we shouldn't have to have them. But you see, I've taken an attitude because I have driven commercial in the past. I've driven some trucks and I've driven a cab. And so I've driven commercially before. And so I have a driver's license, and my mindset at this point, now that I know I don't really need one, but if I don't have one, I may end up in jail from time to time, and I don't feel like doing that. But my attitude is that, well, I have a driver's license just in case I decide to drive commercially. And it's also a good ID also. So that's my thinking and my attitude. And they'll never bring it up in court, well, you got a driver's license, you know, to try to, you know, kind of put me into that situation. But again, you know, I wouldn't give up my driver's license. Some people also, you know, try to give up their citizenship too, and that's really dangerous because they could deport you. You're not
so that's another thing that, so I started with the secured party process, and I sent a packet, and one of them was the affidavit of foreign status, claiming that I'm not a U.S. citizen, I'm a state citizen.
No such thing. You are a U.S. citizen, and you're a citizen of whatever state you're in, but generally speaking, you're not a citizen of a state alone. Remember, you know, we've given the federal government the power and the authority to give people citizenship. States can't do that. Only the United States can do that, the federal. And so when people come here to become citizens of the United States, they become citizens of the United States, which means they got all the rights of every state, and they can plant themselves anywhere they want, and they can pick up one day and be in another state the next day, and there's no paper change, there's nothing. They're just a citizen of that state or a citizen of another state. And so you have all the rights of anybody in any other state anyway. But so that's kind of there really is no state citizenship per se in any formal way as far as trying to get some kind of certificate. It's a U.S. citizen. And you're in a dangerous situation because if they were winning, thank God they're not, but if they were to win and things continue, one of the things they could do is ship you out of here and you could be stuck. There was a movie out there where a guy was stuck in the airport, couldn't leave the airport. Because he was a man without country, you know, and you could be living the rest of your life on a boat floating around at sea or in an airport or something. not being able to leave or something, as crazy as that might sound. But the point is, if you're not a citizen, they can deport you. So, look, I made similar mistakes. I did a declaration. Gerard, you did a declaration too, didn't you, in your county?
Yeah, at the same time, yeah.
Yeah, so we did declarations because we were learning the same things, but then we started to explore things deeper and so on and so forth. I didn't go to, remove that declaration because I did file it with my county. But if you did something with your citizenship, I would suggest to try to get that back, go back and, try to remove that, whatever it was that you'd done, undo it. There was a guy that used to come to the meetings, and he was really heavy into all this stuff, and he got rid of his license, he got rid of it, but he couldn't even drive to the meetings. He had to have someone else to drive. So isn't he pushing someone else to do something that he doesn't want to do also? So there's sort of a contradiction there at the same time. But the thing is you get stuck, you know? Certain things you can't fight. We shouldn't have these birth certificates. That I think is a problem too, and that's something reasonably modern. But we have it. I wouldn't go to try to do anything about it because again, more problems.
Not a birth certificate.
Yeah, you. But you're only creating more problems. More hurdles to jump over and to deal with and face potential jail from time to time, not necessarily long term, but anyway, we do try to deter people from that, but these people that are teaching this stuff really shouldn't be teaching it. They really shouldn't be, because they get a lot of people in trouble. They really do. But go ahead.
Well, even though it was a hung jury, what's happening now is there is another, there's a statutory conference coming up this Friday.
They had a hung jury?
Yes.
And then, so what did that mean? They're trying to try you again?
From what I'm being told, yes.
That's double jeopardy.
That's how but I saw it.
You can move that to federal court for cause. Double jeopardy. Look, I've seen this. I can't believe they get away with this. That's how ignorant we the people are. We the people are that ignorant to not understand that how the jury, just the simplicity of the jury, all 12 agree or they go free. One person stands out and refuses, they go free. There has to be all 12, and 8 is not enough. And they get away with this because we're ignorant. We don't know anything. And I speak to myself first because I was there also. I'm deciding not to be ignorant no more, so I'm doing something about it. But anyway, that's
well,
it.
I already ordered the book, and it's coming Thursday. I did hear that I could do a payment plan on the course because, to be honest, all this court stuff has, wiped me out.
If you want to get into the course, you can go out and download the application, and you could fill it out. You could get in electronically, but if you're going to be payments or want to pay by check or something, just download it and just write on the bottom how much you're paying and however you want to pay the payment plans and just, fulfill the future payment plans. So we want to make sure that everybody can get into this course, and we're only charging $150 for a course that's going to teach you due process and the common law.
And yes, I think it is a great price and a very good course. And so like I said, when I signed up, I didn't exactly know because it just says sign up, pay by check or money order, or sign up and pay by credit card. So you're saying go and do it by check or money order.
Yeah, send the paper in. Send a check in or money order and whatever you can afford right now. And just on the bottom, just write however you want to make a payment plan.
Okay.
We want to try to make it available to everyone.
What you just explained to her is very important, that you could go into almost any case on anything, and if the police are involved, and it's a statutory stuff, you'll find, like what John just said, they're breaking their own rules. That's your weapon. We had a fellow, remember Michael Bagnarek? He used to drive around with his own, with no plate, with his own plates. But he was so good at knowing the Constitution and knowing due process that he would get them every time on stuff.
And,
like,
and I think he was intimidating, too. He intimidated.
Well, they finally put the word out to leave him alone. In his county, nobody would pull him over in his county. They knew better. You know, the all the police chiefs told the guys, leave him alone. He's more trouble than he's worth because, you know, he would sue them and successfully because they're always doing something stupid. They're always escalating it to something that they shouldn't, you know. And they are liable for all that if you know how to get them and how to tie them down. You know, the trouble is you know, he made a name for himself around that state, but he still spent all his time fighting with them, you know, because the counties or the states that don't know him, they're going to put him through the same baloney, you know what I mean? So he was always in court, always had lawsuits going. He always won, but it was always from one case to the next to the next.
Yeah, but he did say one of the hard things is sometimes you had to sit in jail for a while.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing, you know.
Yeah, that's the
a lot of sacrifice to prove a point, you know.
And we have a lot of his recordings. We have his constitutional course up on our website in one of our courses. I don't remember which one.
And really, the only reason that they could do anything that they do to you with your car is because with the title, they essentially own it. You're driving their car.
Yeah, I don't have the MCO.
Yeah, no, and so that's, you know, whether the officers know it or not, most of the police officers don't know that, but technically speaking, you know, that's where they get the first jurisdiction over you, is the fact that they... you know, they're holding the ownership of the car. And so, therefore, they could tell you how, why, when, and where to operate, like, you know.
Same thing with your land, too, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we have a building inspector over here when I was fighting with them. He even said, you don't own your land. You just rent it. You rent it and you pay us back.
Unless you have a land patent.
Yeah, but you look at, you're going to tell somebody they don't own their land, you want to start riots, you go down that road.
And that the land patent thing is an uphill battle also, just like, and again, I think the easiest way to go is just go battle them out to change your property over to private property. Once it's turned to private property, then your position, I hear that you don't have to pay taxes then, but you at least that's your position, you won't have to pay taxes.
Well, you got to get the assessor to take it off the tax roll because she put the description on it, and she's basically, she or he, has classified it as commercial so that they have, you know, an ability.
Or residential in the case of homes. So.
Well, and basically.
That's part of their civil law thing, you know. So.
Right.
So even if you have your car in a trust, in the business name in a trust, they still have, and it's not registered, they still have?
Unless you have the certificate of origin, you don't own your car. Okay. Whoever has that.
And they send it to the state.
Yeah. I think they destroy it too, don't they? Or do they keep it?
I think they send it to the state.
Well, they do send it to the state, yeah.
Yeah, you'll never get it back from them, though.
You go buy a new car from a dealer. You're going to want to argue with the dealer that you want your certificate of ownership. You don't want it to go to the state. I want it. You know, I don't know how that would go. I never made that battle. I don't know anybody who's made that battle, but that's a battle that you can try. Well, it's well worth doing.
I would try it. But speaking of trying it, so now, right now, having to go to a statutory conference, which... I mean, I have to go. I've been kind of forced into everything. And I spent 8 days in jail. And so having to go to this statutory conference because they want to retry it what paperwork do I need to put together? Like, what do I need to do
You need to move your case to federal court for court violation of your right your protected right of not having double jeopardy. You've already been tried, and a jury that can't come up with a decision frees you. You're free, and that judge should have continued to push that jury back to that room and say, you're going to stay there till you come to a decision. And if you can't come to a decision, you're going to have to come to an agreement that you can't come to that decision and come in here and find that person not guilty, period. That's the law. That's how it works, okay? You keep them there for days, weeks, whatever. You stay there until you come up with a decision. That's your job. But they don't do that. And then there's cases where judges don't like the ruling of the jury, and they throw the jury ruling out and they try again anyway. But in any event, if you've been through a trial and they couldn't come up with a decision and now they're trying to get you back into a trial again, that's double jeopardy, no matter how you put it.
Okay, so there should not be a statutory conference this Friday then. This should be over.
Well, I wouldn't not go because you'll find yourself back in jail again. But, yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of things you need to – I don't understand your case enough to be able to really give you any advice on that. The only thing – again, you have to understand due process, and that's what the course is about. So if you once you get to understand how due process works, and then you have to understand the common law, and we spend a lot of time on common law, and we're going to spend a lot more time on common law in this course – I mean, that's what this is all about, court access and the common law. And so it's important, of course, to get this picture in your mind and what liberty really is and all of your freedoms and what our rights are and to be able to see all the problems in the courts and even our political system, to see all the problems and the abuse and the corruption. And the more knowledge you have of the common law, the clearer all that becomes to you, okay? But again, it's an argument that once you put this all together, now it's puzzling. Everything else is puzzling. And the more time you spend puzzling things in not just in this, but in anywhere in life, the better you get at it. And the better the ability to come up with more options. The more you puzzle, more options will show up, this option, that option, or some kind of a thing you don't understand, you know, some kind of a mystery somewhere will show its head, and now you know you got to work on that. What's going on there? I don't understand that. You have to understand everything in your case. You have to understand everything that the other side throws at you, everything that they say, every piece of evidence they got, any statement they make. You have to understand everything. And then you have to build a defense against every single word, every single phrase, every single sentence, every single paragraph. I mean, you puzzle, 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 puzzle. That's where the real time in your court case comes from, obviously, right in the papers. Motions are simple, okay? Discovery is simple, although discovery is a lot of strategy, again, puzzling how to ask the questions. And the ideal thing is to ask simple sentences, one noun, one verb. And you want to, you know, if you ask a question and it comes up with two or three items and one of them is false, one of them is if you can deny one, okay, one of those three that's in one question, then you could deny the whole thing. Okay, and that's why when you write papers and you're going through discovery and these people have to answer and respond to the questions you're asking them, you got to make them very simple and just maybe ask a lot of questions just to make one point, and ask it from many different directions, perspectives.
Do I get the discovery from the public defender?
Well, when you go through the course, I think you said you want to get into the course, right?
Yes.
You're not in the course yet, right? You want to get into it.
No, I was going through the introduction. I'm almost done with the introduction, and I ordered the book, which is going to be arriving on Thursday.
Okay, and then now you want to get into the course so you can get the rest of the course. Because we gave the first part of it, the introduction, we gave for free so people can see what it's
right.
like what we're doing.
Yes.
And
yes.
So Yeah, you wanna get into the course, and all your mysteries that you're thinking, as far as due process is concerned, okay, all the mysteries concerning due process, and due process is going through a court process. It's all of the things involved, motions and discovery, and you know, you write your pleadings in the beginning, and they answer, and you reply, and it's the back and forth thing. That's due process. Okay, all of those things is due process. And you'll learn all that, and once you got that, then you'll be able to put it together, and then you'll be able to understand more. You know, if you were to ask a question, you'd probably understand the answer a lot better if you understand how things work. And I've mentioned this over and over again. It's real simple. You know, don't make it difficult. Once you see it, it's real simple.
Say, John, I've got a relevant note for you. Gerard, over at Patriot Soapbox, if you'll ask Thumper, I've heard Thumper talk about this. He tabled it with the motorcycle dealership. He said, hey, I want to get a deal on the bike. You don't have to send the paperwork in. I know how to do it. You give me the certificate of origin, and I'll take care of it. So ask Thumper about that.
That's a good idea, but there's another way to get around that, too. Definitely we should ask Thumper. Gerard, you see Thumper often enough. Maybe you can ask him about it and let me know what he says. But, you know, the bottom line is, especially if you're buying any vehicle, a motorcycle or whatever, I mean, the guy wants to make the sale, and the boss, his boss wants to make the sale. You know, you can make the sale as long as you're going to get that paper, you know. Like you say, I'll take care of it maybe, but whatever, you want to get that certificate.
It's 11, John.
So I have basically like Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, because court is Friday at 10 o'clock. In those 3 days, what should I focus on doing?
You're gonna challenge them in federal court. That's what you're gonna do. You gotta go on the site and see how to make that paperwork that brings you into the federal court. That should stop the.
Well, you don't have a lawyer, right?
Well, they forced one on me.
Yeah. Okay.
I even said you're fired, and he would not drop it.
Yeah, they do that all the time.
Now, this is an administrative hearing. They're calling it an administrative hearing?
Statutory conference.
Statutory conference. Well, the only thing you could do is tell them, you know, look, it's difficult because you're going in there, and whatever you do, you don't know what to do next. You don't know how to write the papers to deal with it, so it's all problematic again. I mean, but the bottom line is you got to get, you got to really find a way to bite for time, maybe. That's number one, and then do crash courses. I mean, even if you just catch up to where we're at, you'll have enough information to be able to do your papers, but that's a crash course. And all of the chapters that we've done already is all recorded, so you could do it at your own speed. You could do a chapter a day, you know, and then the recap one. You see, when I get to the recap, that's really going to tie everything together in a nice way, I think, because then that's where the simplicity will be seen on how simple this is. And that's probably a couple chapters away, so it's a couple of weeks away. So you got to find a way to buy time, number one. You know, if it was me and I'm in the court, I would tell them that this is double jeopardy, and I'm going to move this to federal court for cause, and then file a paper with your intention of what you're doing. Then you get some time to perfect that paper. I don't know how that's going to go over for you, though, there.
Yeah, and, you know, when you go to federal court, you want to keep it simple. Although, I think I would mention the fact that, well, it might throw the whole thing out, the fact that they're operating with only 8 jurors. I never heard of such a thing.
Yeah, they're 2 points, yeah.
You know what I mean?
So you absolutely cannot have a trial with 8 jurors, because they even had 10, and they said 2 of them were alternates and took them out.
Nope.
Well, who took them out? The judge?
Yeah. They had all 10 jurors, like the numbers, 1 through 10,
they
in a little basket or whatever.
12. 12 is common law. 12 is tradition. 12 is what is. Anything less than that means it's some kind of other court. Is this called a criminal court?
Yes.
It is. It's got the title.
I asked,
challenge
because
judge.
I said, I deserve to know the nature and cause. I said, is this criminal civil? They said, well, it's criminal. I said, okay, there's two jurisdictions. I'm like, so is this common law or is this colorable admiralty, maritime? And they said, this is not admiralty.
Yes.
And they wouldn't say it was common law, though.
Well, it's civil law. You see,
and
if
they
it's
said,
civil
I
law,
said, is it civil or criminal? And they said it was criminal.
Okay, two things. Criminal, if it's a criminal court and if it's a civil court, they don't have jurisdiction over your personam jurisdiction. So they don't have jurisdiction over your person. You can challenge jurisdiction. Again, you run into another problem. You got to write the papers. You got to serve the papers. You got to make sure you do it all right. You got to know what the next step is. You got to make your arguments and your moves, your motions. It's just not one thing, okay, because they're going to fight you tooth and nail. And you're not going to get that court-appointed lawyer or the lawyer that they gave you. You're not going to get him to go along with this. And it's hard to get any lawyer to go along with you on this, as a matter of fact, because it's outside the normal boundaries of their process that they're used to.
Right.
You know, so the rules, they got these rules, and some of these rules are repugnant. You know, it's not cut and dry. On the one hand, it is kind of simple, but you have to know process. Due process. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's where I'm getting stuck, and that's where I wasn't knowing where to go. I mean, I found you. I don't know if you know her name, Andromedia Cheryl Robinson,
yep.
Washington.
Yep.
Yes, and she got me connected, and I actually talked to her for about like an hour and a half. And she had recommended a Louise Ewing, but being in another state, it just made me a little uncomfortable.
Well, what does your lawyer say the consequences of this hearing is going to be? I mean, they're going to what's his thinking on it? Does he give you any options on any information on what he thinks going to happen or might happen or could happen?
Well, when it comes to him, the first thing he said before we even went to trial, he goes, "We're probably going to, you know, you're going to be getting charged with the felony assault." He goes, "That's probably going to happen." He goes, "You know, we might be able to get out of resisting arrest," because they never said I was under arrest. Nobody ever said you are under arrest.
The point is what are you being arrested for? That's the question.
Well,
and they don't have a right to put their hands on you in any way, shape, or form unless they were arresting you. And if they were arresting you, what were the charges? What were you being arrested for? And they won't have an answer for that.
They won't, and they didn't,
and
that was brought up.
Therefore,
they said not giving the VIN is not arrestable charge.
You can't resist arrest if they have no charges to arrest you for, and that's where it falls apart, and your lawyer may be thinking that out that way. I would imagine that's the only way I can think it out.
Well, and he really didn't, you know, it was stated, he stated it over and over that the officers never said, and that giving a VIN, not giving your VIN is not an arrestable offense and there is no crime. But for some reason, the judge kept that in there. She wouldn't take that charge out. She wouldn't dismiss that charge. And I just don't even understand why. It was like cut and dry. I don't get it. But then with the assault charges that, you know, well, you've been...
Is there any fear of you being arrested when you go there?
No.
Okay. Well, then look at, you just want to buy as much time as you can, okay, and get into the course. You know, well, again, you have a lot of hours to put into this thing. You got a lot of hours to put into this thing. You know, if you can put 40 hours into the course, you'll pretty much catch up. I mean, I'm trying to think, we have 11 sessions or 10 sessions done. And of those sessions, they're about 3 hours apiece. So let's say there's 10, so that's 30 hours. So if you really buckle down and you could do one session a day, that's 10 days, or you can push it for 8 hours a day with breaks in between and get through it. So at least you have the whole thing. Then you're going to want to go back and review, because the key thing to all this stuff is review, 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 read, read, read. And you'll hear that in a course constantly. But at least you'll get the big picture, you'll get the framework, you'll catch up. You know, if you're looking at the desktop here, okay, you know, introduction and chapter one here, the essentials, that's all about common law ultimately and constitutions and so on. The real process of how the court works and how things work is, starts with chapter two with the pleadings, okay? And you need to understand what all this is. And we go through every one of these items, so, you know, by the time you go through it, you'll understand it. Then we go back and we get into more detail of it. We cover causes of actions, evidence, affidavits, and then we then go into defenses, and then into the motions, okay? And then once we get into memorandums of law, we're back into really looking into common law. And a lot of these memorandums of law, you can use any one of them and, you know, change things around or use them the way they are, whatever you want to do. And then we're going to get a little deeper into the rules and the rules of common law and the rules of federal rules. And it's all in the name, Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. And you see, I'm not going into a civil court. I'm going into a court of law, common law. And so it's called a court of record. And when they go after you for trying to say you don't have a license to practice law, you know, your argument to them would be, I'm not practicing civil law. I'm exercising my right under common law. And the right of access into a court of justice is an unalienable right, and a right to defend yourself is an unalienable right. So you can do whatever you want. And I'm not going into their civil law courts because I don't belong there. They can call it the civil law court, but I'm calling it a common law court because I opened the court up. You know, in this case, I'm the plaintiff. Now, then the next thing after that is getting ready for trial and the appellate process, enforcement, the extraordinary writs. And then we're going to do some case examples. And then ended up with NLA and the committees of safety. You know, right now we're in chapter 4. We just finished 4, so we're in chapter 5. Okay, so if you really buckle down, you can get through this and then spend every day after that going back, reviewing and practicing writing papers to move your case into federal court for cause, learn about the challenge. And we're going to learn a lot of the common law that we teach here, and you should be able to do some good research on that and deal with the problem with the jury, that's a violation. And the fact that there's no such thing as what did they call it? The jury was locked or something? What did they call it?
A hung jury.
A hung jury, yeah. No such thing as a hung jury. It doesn't exist. Okay. So anyway.
Seven said guilty and one said not guilty.
You could do this thing if you learn and you put your time into it.
So do I tell them, or will it piss them off, or like, do I tell them that
no,
I'm
I wouldn't
going
do much.
To
look
it to federal court?
I'd roll with the punches here. You know, if they're going to go in and make some decisions and have more hearings, and it's gonna blast out for the next 6 or 8 weeks, you don't have to do nothing. Just let the lawyer do whatever he wants to do while you start learning and preparing your case. And then when you feel you can take it over, then you take it over. And you fire him. In order to fire him, you can't fire him directly. You have to file with the court to fire him. And if they refuse it, you ignore that anyway, and you file your paper moving into federal court for cause. Doesn't matter. And just move forward anyway. And you know, just ignore the lawyer at that point. He's not going to want to go to federal court anyway.
Okay.
But anyway, you know, you got to understand due process, how it works. So
the only thing I'm just so confused on is they said it was criminal court, And if it's criminal court, you said then it has to be common law.
Right.
But then
right.
they were like, no, it's not common law.
If you're in a criminal court, if they call themselves a criminal court, it's not a court of record. Okay. There's a Supreme Court ruling on this. I'll see if I can't find it for you. I've used it a few times. So, but we got to take our next person. We're over time here. So
okay.
Gerard, you want to take the next person?
Thank you.
Thank you. We could talk some more later. So.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Gerard, you want to take one more person?
Yes. We're running over time here, so.
Cynthia, and then maybe we'll end there. I know we did have another person.
We're already 18 minutes over. It's getting long. Mm-hmm. All right. I'm gonna take the next question because they've been waiting a long time. It looks like Cynthia Joe. What state are you from, Cynthia?
It's actually Steve and Timothy, Cynthia Joe's husband. We're in Hawaii.
Aloha.
We'll allow that.
Sure.
Another Hawaiian after you.
Yeah.
But you already spoke, so we may drop her.
The question is this.
Waiting me overboard, but go ahead.
The question is, if you have to move your case to the federal court for cause, do you have to pay for that?
You shouldn't have to.
No.
What? No?
No, because it's moving from one court to another. No. They may try to get some money off you, though. I mean, I bet you they do.
It's kind of interesting that he brought that up, but I bet you.
I know with the United States Supreme Court, they want $300, and mm-hmm. I'm not going to give it to them, you know? But they're claiming they want $300 moving it up to the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court. But no, there's no charge to move it to federal court for the cause.
So for the people that I was listening to, Zander's case here in Hawaii and this other woman's in Arizona's case, what process? So they just go to the federal court and say, here's my case in this court, and I want it moved for cause? Is that right?
But there is a process for that and paperwork, and we'll cover that in our course.
Yeah, and we're in the course. So, but I'm just thinking for their benefit, their knowledge.
We do have another page. If you go into Education Starts Here, come down to Law, and then you come over to Court Forms and Process.
Okay.
I've been thinking of shutting this page down, but I haven't. Only because, people will look at these things, and if they don't have any knowledge beyond what they're just going to learn here now, and they're just going to get themselves in more and more trouble because you've got to know how things work. But anyway, on this page, if people who have some basic idea and understanding of the process, they understand the motions and the causes of actions, how to write pleadings and so on and so forth, how discovery works. If you understand all that, then you can go here and you can get the instructions to move to federal court for cause. Let's see, challenge jurisdiction. Right here are the instructions for that.
Okay, awesome.
That's to move to federal court for cause. And that's under Education Starts Here, Law, and then Court Forms and Process. Now, by the way, this is one, I think this is the only page. There may be another page, I just can't think of it, if there is. But I think this is the only page. To get to this page, you have to be a premium member. And a premium member is anybody given $5 a month or more. So they're just supporting our work here.
Yeah.
And anybody in the course can get here anyway. But look, as far as this, the updated paperwork on this is in our course, though.
So that same, all of the information on that page is in the course?
Oh, yeah. And it's updated. I'm learning all the time. I'm doing, sometimes, I find better ways to write things better. I find new things to put in. I find errors and I make my corrections. I'm not error-free. Nobody is. And... so you always, that's why in law or in any field, it's called a practice, because you're practicing. You're always learning, and you're always getting better. But anyway, the updated stuff, we have that in the course.
Okay, awesome. My question mostly was for those other people and how to find and how to do that so that they could help them out. But thank you so much, John. I appreciate it. We are, as you know, we are in the course. We are learning a great deal of information, and I get it. Read, read, read till your eyes fall out. Put them back in your head and read some more.
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, awesome. Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay, and with that, I think we'll close. We're already like 20 minutes over. And we'll see you next week. Same time, same place. God bless.
God bless.
Yep.